It's another Monday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Monday night, and we are, as always, taking your phone calls at 812-333-2665. Plenty to talk about tonight, all kinds of stuff. The Pacers have filed tampering charges against the Los Angeles Lakers and Magic Johnson in particular about Paul George. We'll see if that goes anywhere. Archie Miller has another commitment. It's an in-state kid out of Lafayette. Robert Finney is committed as a point guard to Indiana University. That's a 2018 commitment, and I believe there's an accelerated signing period now for basketball, so he could sign in November if he were to do that. But that's another Indiana kid, so folks are happy about that. He is a four-star kid and an Indiana point guard, so you got to like that. We've got Colts versus Dallas down in Dallas, and the Colts did not look particularly great in any one particular area, so we've got some stuff we can talk about there. A lot of people talking about what do you do with the quarterbacks. Well, it's all a holding pattern until Andrew Luck gets back, but people still want in the offseason, I guess, to go nuts about that. Makes sense. We don't know when Andrew's coming back, but we'll talk about all that and more. But we start with IU football camp. And unfortunately, the biggest news of the last week or so is off the field. So the good news there is it isn't about an injury, although we do have a couple we can update you on. But it's about off the field and who will not be able to play this fall. Bryant Fitzgerald from Avon High School up near Indianapolis has been ruled ineligible by the NCAA. He was given advice by the IU Compliance Department about his eligibility in classes or something to the effect of classes and things that he needed to be eligible at Indiana University. It turned out to not be the case. He came up, I believe, a class short, could have fixed it if they had known about it or let him know about it ahead of time. I guess they didn't know for sure about it, or they would have let him know about it. They filed an appeal with the NCAA to see if they could get him eligible, saying that it was the compliance department that messed up and not the kid. The NCAA denied that. IU appealed that, and then the NCAA denied that. So there's a lot going on here. The NCAA has a chance to help make something right that Indiana's compliance office screwed up. But we got to start with the fact that Indiana's compliance office screwed up, and they screwed up with an in-state kid. And if there's ever anybody that, to me, that you ought to get right if you're going to let them in, it's an in-state kid to your in-state institution. The compliance department is there to get this right for people. I don't know all of the ins and outs of this exact situation, but Glass, this is extraordinarily embarrassing for the compliance department. Their job is only to get people on the right track so that they are eligible to play athletics at Indiana University and to get into school at Indiana University, and for them to give the kid bad information. Of course it's an accident, but that doesn't make it right, and it doesn't make it good. I hate to call for heads and stuff like that, but you know, it's ridiculous that they can't get this kid the right information, and now it's going to cost him a year. He can't practice. He can do other things, you know, the weight room and all that sort of thing, but he can't practice now, so he's got a year off. And this is a kid who may have played very well for Indiana University. We're talking about him backing up Marcelino Ball.
What did the NCAA solve by not letting Bryant Fitzgerald become eligible? What message are they sending? That no one can make mistakes?
Yeah, crack the whip at Indiana, but don't do it at him.
There is nothing that Indiana tried to do to sneak him under the wire, sneak him under the back door.
Yeah.
What was the advantage?
Admitted the mistake.
What was the advantage that Bryant Fitzgerald, and notice I'm talking, I didn't say Indiana University once. Mm-hmm. What advantage did Bryant Fitzgerald claim by listening to his compliance officers and being told the inaccurate information? All he did as a freshman coming in was to try to get eligible. Who else do you listen to? You listen to the compliance department. The NCAA has just told you, one appeal, two appeals, mm-hmm. that you are never allowed to make a mistake ever. It cost a kid a year.
Yeah.
How does that kid, what did he have to do with it? Fred Glass was exactly right. Kid has nothing to do with this. Nothing at all.
Yeah.
The NCAA could have fixed this and said, look, get your act together.
Right.
But punishing the kid has nothing to do with this. The kid doesn't come in and say, here's what I'm doing. Get it done.
Right.
They say, here's what you need to do to have it done.
And all accounts are he had great grades and qualifications everywhere else. He came up short on one thing.
Doesn't matter. The point is, they had time to rectify it.
Mm-hmm.
They appealed it. They said they were wrong. They said, here are the ways we're going to fix being wrong. And the NCAA could have been a hero in the situation and said, you know,
yep,
that's your problem. You screwed it up. Here's a fine. Here's whatever it takes. I don't even care what that is.
And the admissions in this case is at the university anyways.
The kid has nothing to do with it. Is Indiana get penalized for this? No. Doesn't sound like it.
Only in not having the kid available. But
well, but the point is, the compliance department,
they don't find
they
the
don't
compliance
get suspended
department
a year.
Yeah.
But the kid does. Mm-hmm. So it's just once the NCAA sees things through colored glasses that you can't even buy for the eclipse.
Yeah, it doesn't make
any
sense.
Where is the rationale? Where is the law of common sense? Where is the leadership at the NCAA saying, you did what?
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't appeal. Why? Because the in-house people screwed it up? Well, guess what would happen if the NCAA clearinghouse would have screwed it up? They'd have been the first to say, oh, you go ahead and play.
Right.
Our fault. Whoa, geez. Yeah, sorry about it. But I don't understand what the end game is. I don't understand how this helps or protects the student athlete. All you do is tell student athletes, prospective student athletes, go to our website and read this. Go this, print this out. Go here, fill this out. These are the 19,632 people you need to talk to when you get on campus. These are the 42,867 rules you need to follow in a manual that's taller than my three-year-old. So the kid does everything right, and the kid gets penalized?
Yeah.
Well, am I missing something here? Am I out to lunch? The point is, the NCAA could have fixed this. They could have simply said, look, we got it. You're wrong. Is this some kind of precedent they're afraid to set? That a kid listened to the people he should listen to, and they screwed up, and you penalize the kid? It makes absolutely no sense. None at all. Yeah, Fitzgerald gets the red shirt. Great, he'll have four more years. Guess what happens if he gets hurt next year?
There's a minor
bright spot
in that
regard.
That. But you know, that's
you're forcing him to take a red shirt year he possibly need.
I really don't want to hear the bright spot given all that. What's even more ridiculous about this from the NCAA, because it is ridiculous from the NCAA.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
We're certainly not going to let them off the hook, and I'm not going to let IU compliance off the hook. But you know, for the NCAA also, you're dealing with things like North Carolina situation, which is taken years now
Louisville
to even get them
and hookers.
But I'm just looking at North Carolina here, where it's an academic situation where they're accused of literally sending hundreds of kids through certain classes that are only available or mostly available to them to get an easy grade so that they can remain eligible. It is a complete fraud of the academic system altogether.
Sure is.
And you're telling me somehow that if this kid came up one credit short or whatever it was, does not sound like it was a big thing. It sounds like it was a small thing. Why in the world is this saving everyone from the North Carolina situation? If that's where you're going, is the idea that somehow IU has got to pay or has got to be the example for all the stuff that's come up until now, it's ridiculous.
Louisville had strippers and hookers.
Yeah.
Not short of class because some paperwork didn't get filled out.
Were they hired as tutors?
Doesn't matter. The kids were there. But my point is, you're suspending
the
Fitzgerald.
Underage kids and their parents.
You're suspending Fitzgerald for a season for something he didn't do.
Yeah.
These kids were at parties with people that they shouldn't have been with under the supervision of the basketball program.
Yes.
And all these kids are playing basketball.
Mm-hmm.
How? If you're the NCAA, how can you justify any of this?
Yeah.
It is senseless. It is. I'm out of adjectives. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
It is
but
ridiculous.
The point is, put them next to each other side by side. Just line them up.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you do an NCAA tournament resume that you guys want to talk about RPIs. But all you do is talk about protecting the student athlete.
Yeah.
All you do is talk about making sure that it's a clean, shiny experience and nothing goes wrong and nothing's seedy and nothing's this. And you sign the waiver that says you can't gamble and you can't do this and you can't do that. And your conduct is different than their conduct. This kid did every single thing that was needed.
Mm-hmm.
But he was given bad advice. Not bad advice to go to a party with strippers and hookers.
Right.
He got bad advice on what classes to sign up for.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense at all. My point is this. The NCAA could have fixed this.
Yeah.
There was time to fix it. There was time to correct it. They chose not to. This is why nobody takes them seriously. Because the scope of their decision making is nothing short of asinine. When you put up North Carolina's problems, Louisville's problems, you want to keep going through? How about the kid, the punter, making a couple bucks on YouTube videos?
Right.
Hey, where's your scholarship? Gone.
Yeah, right.
Gone.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Gone. Who's in charge here? What are these people doing? Are they even in reality?
Yeah.
The point of this, the kid was doing academic things he was told to do. He was not taking some online courses from Burundi trying to sneak in the back door.
Right, exactly.
He's doing everything,
and again, all accounts
for the most part that he wanted to do.
That close to begin with, and had good grades and good qualifications.
And you feel awful because, again, he looks at the mirror and looks at his coach and says,
"What do I do? Yeah.
You told me.
What do I do?
This is what you told me to do."
Yeah.
But it looks like Bryant Fitzgerald. Got to keep your Bryants separated there. Bryant Fitzgerald said, "Yeah, I'll be back stronger. I'll be back." This coach Tom Allen had talked about earlier in the week, dealing with adversity and when it happens to you, how it makes you a bigger person and everything else. Those life lessons are fine and good, but if you want categorically finite injustice, yeah, I think we have found it. And this should be a case study moving forward,
yeah,
anywhere to say, this is what's wrong with it. You guys are nuts.
Well,
nuts.
And I'm going to point back again. The point of the compliance department is to get you eligible to play at this university, to get you into this university. And if you can't get an in-state kid whose qualifications you should know better than anybody, this is not a kid coming from Samoa, or a kid coming from, the Dominican Republic or something like that. This is a kid from up the road. It's a kid from an Indiana high school. These are the people you should know better than anyone what they need to have to get into your university. It should not be difficult. It should not be that hard.
And making
Fred Glass has said they're taking steps, and that's exactly what you have to say. You have to take
redundancies.
Steps. You have to do something. But that's extremely embarrassing. And you're right. The NCAA, problem with the NCAA is you don't expect more than that right now.
Nope, you don't.
And you haven't for years.
And these are the people that struggled forever to find out if Derrick Rose even took his SAT test,
exactly.
But they know exactly what. But the interesting thing I find to all this was, he was doing the things that he was told and had time to correct it, and they still wouldn't let him correct it.
Yeah.
They showed, hey, here's how we can fix this.
Oh, well,
nope.
No.
Sorry, you're done.
If Indiana had known, they would have had time to correct it. I thought was the way that was written, but
the point still, again, they violated the letter. They didn't violate the spirit. And to me, that's painful to see because the kid suffers. If you want to throw the book at the university, throw the whole Encyclopedia Britannica at the university. That's fine. Leave the kid alone. The kid had nothing to do with it. Nothing. Nothing. Zero zilch. And that's what drives me crazy. We're not using common sense, and we're not protecting the student athlete. And that seems to be their claim to fame. That's their mission. They failed greatly in doing so this time, in my opinion.
So Bryant Fitzgerald will not be on the field, will not be practicing, in fact, with Indiana University this fall. He does keep his scholarship. He goes to class. He also gets to do things, like eat and train and those sorts of things, but no football practice. He'll be back next year. Got to take a quick break. 812-333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. You're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 812-333-2665 is the phone number. Again, Bryant Fitzgerald will not be playing this fall. He has been ruled a partial qualifier, essentially. I'm not sure that's the exact term, but that is essentially what it is. He will not be allowed to practice this fall. He does keep his scholarship, will be allowed to use all the facilities and all those things, so presumably weights and training and all the trainers in particular, and food and all that kind of thing, room and board, etc. Cannot actually get out on the field and practice. Not sure. I think that probably takes care of spring also, but don't quote me on that. But I saw competing in that, but I think you're out.
I think it's the football season, which will end after the bowl game.
Yeah, I saw it somewhere where it said he'd be eligible in the spring. We'll leave that. I mean, that's not that imperative
it is. But I'm pretty sure once the football season is complete, that is the end of quote-unquote that.
Gotcha.
The spring, I believe, is a new piece of chicken on the bone.
Gotcha.
That you move on to. But I'll double-check on that when we get around to that, which, as you mentioned, we won't have to worry about. But in 10 days or so, we'll have something else to worry about.
Yep.
The Ohio State Buckeyes come to town, number 2 in the country, and Indiana University, Ohio State, 8 o'clock ESPN. Megacast will be there.
Yep.
Game Day will be there. Lee Corso will receive the Orwig Medal of Honor after the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And all the fun stuff that goes with that. So there's other things to happen. And as you feel terribly for Fitzgerald, which you should do,
right?
Indiana has some they have some depth at some positions, and somebody will have to step up and make a case for playing time. Marcelino Ball is awfully good at what he does, Dave, and if they could spare him some snaps in some situations, maybe not against Ohio State, but maybe in some other places, he'll have a fresher Marcelino Ball at the end of the season. Well, that's the key you've heard them talk about.
You have to have other bodies, and I suppose the good news there is even without Bryant Fitzgerald, this is the deepest secondary as far as bodies and just overall athleticism and talent that you've seen at Indiana University in a long time. So you've got bodies that that can fill in there, and we will see against Ohio State. Unfortunately, it's on the other side. It's at that offensive line spot where you've already had some questions as far as, you know, youth. You know, there is potential there. You know, Jay called us last week and said, hey, there's potential there. He's exactly right. There is potential there. There are bodies. Their recruiting has been, you know, better across the board at every position. So, yes, there are some really good options there. And there are some kids, obviously, that are coming back that have played a good bit of football already. But unfortunately, one of the names that we'd like to see there, Brandon Knight, has got an injury. And we're, you know, not getting an exact timetable on him. And it's kind of a wait-and-see kind of timetable on him, to the point where they've moved a tight end, Danny Friend, into that tackle position. Now, this is not an unusual move over time. I've seen a number of kids come out of high school as tight ends that end up as offensive tackles pretty quick. The reason is coaches like their athleticism. If they're tight ends, they can run usually pretty darn well if they're tight ends. And you need to be a little bit more athletic at that tackle position given the range of motion you have to cover defensive ends and blitzing linebackers
and
that sort of thing.
For the last 3 years, the tight end in Indiana's offense after Ted Bolzer left has been a blocking back.
Exactly.
You stick a different number on him, you stick him in a different formation. What's different?
Right.
I'm not sure. The other good news is if they have issue at tight end or if they have depth problems there, he can slide back over to that. It's not like you forget how to play tight end. So.
And they do have some other tight ends and some young tight ends. And
Ian Thomas is the big focus.
They have been raving about Ian Thomas since the spring went on. And if you watched any of the tapes from the spring, you saw how much they are going to use him at kind of wide positions. They want to get this guy involved in the passing game all over the field. They like him a lot. He's 6'5", 250. He can run. He comes from a junior college. Last year was his first year, and we didn't hear much about him. But you're right. For a couple years there, they used the tight ends as additional blockers to go make the offensive line and their running game go, and it did. I mean,
2,000 yards.
Yeah, Jordan Howard and Tevin Coleman. I mean, they got help from the fact that there were extra blockers in there, too. You know, so this year, they're going to look at, you know, trying to split that guy out a little bit more.
And they have a freshman in Peyton Henry. Hendershot that you've heard them talk about that they're very high on. You just saw Ryan Watercutter get a scholarship in the last couple of days. You don't get a scholarship because they feel bad for you. You get a scholarship because you perform and do things the program needs. And you earned it. I think that's a good word to use. So they are comfortable in moving those guys along because they have some other bodies there. Doris is the other big body. So they have some depth at that position. And I think that's been the key to this camp, Dave. Everybody that we've talked to in press afterwards, no one's saying, geez, I'd love to have three or four more guys.
Right.
Everybody, there's a stable of running backs. Brandon Shelby's deep at defensive back.
Mm-hmm.
The safeties are guys, Dutra and Fields are fighting for positions.
Yeah.
And Jonathan Crawford's back there. So you've got these three guys. You've got the young kids that are coming up and battling. Everybody's mentioning the young kids. So you have all these great battles going on. It's something that Chuck Pagano and Chris Ballard wanted in Colts camp. They wanted competition. The good news for Indiana's camp, Dave, it seems like all these guys that are doing it are mainly the sophomore, junior, the upper side of it, and then you can ease the freshmen in.
Exactly.
You don't have to force them into front
load
carries.
That's what I keep
talking
about.
So that's why that depth is
important. Your program through recruiting.
Name off their cornerbacks.
Having these guys as redshirt sophomores and juniors starting to compete with a senior for some playing time is how you want this to happen so that freshman doesn't have to jump in there and be playing every snap.
I mean, you've got, you know, the corner position has seven or eight guys
that could
go, and you know what? That's going to fill your special teams. That's going to fill your punt and kick teams and your punt units. That's why Indiana football, they're at a level of depth I don't think you and I have seen in some time doing this program for the sheer athletic nature of it. They're recruiting some kids from some different areas. You heard Coach Brandon Shelby, who's a cornerbacks coach, earlier in camp say, I recruit kids from down south. because they play a lot of ball.
Yeah.
And they play ball. And those perhaps are kids that can come in and help you maybe a little bit sooner than maybe Greg Heben from the baseball team. Nothing wrong with Greg. Greg was a great contributor.
If you're a corner,
but that's the difference.
It's not as physical.
Yeah. Remember, Mitchell?
You can run around. I mean, you've got a lot more space to run around in, and you can use your athleticism in that regard.
You know,
and
you're
it's not
moving,
about hitting as much.
You're not moving guys from corner to wide receiver and wide receiver to corner and fullback to running back and running back to linebacker.
Yeah, pulling them off the intramural field.
Chris Covington, I get it. A little bit of a different scenario.
Yeah, well, that's been a couple years now, though, too.
Right, and he's been in that position. But you're putting guys at places where you've recruited them to play.
Right.
And when you don't have this wheel of uncertainty of where you're going to stick a guy in, perhaps the only thing we really saw recently was this tight end tackle move. Brandon Knight kind of played tackle; he didn't play. He played tight end.
Well, his freshman year, they stuck him at tight end as a blocking tight end to get an extra blocker out there,
catch a ball if necessary, whatever it is. But it seems like the positions are more solidified in the sense you don't have guys having to learn 2.5 positions, 1.5 positions, and it's easier to do your job when you can focus on your job and not maybe a job and a half.
Right.
Or trying to keep up when you're not getting as many reps with that.
The only issue right now would be that you're hearing maybe some uncertainty as to who is going to be your top line at certain positions. Running back is one of those. Wide receiver, even. You would have thought, hey, I can name five guys that I expect right this minute to be playing, and you'd probably be right. But even there, Grant Hurd is talking about, hey, I want, you know, I'm still looking for the guys that are going to tell me who is the top of the line.
And
at DB, I think you've got a pretty solid list of guys where you say these are the guys, and we might have two extra that we have to work in there, and that's a little bit different conversation. But you know, it is interesting. There's a couple
and
spots where we're still asking questions, but of a better group to ask them of.
I think it's interesting for the simple fact neither Mike Hart nor Grant Hurd were here last year. They don't
have part of it.
Well,
yeah,
Brandon Shelby was.
Yeah.
He has guys that have been 4-year guys with him, and 3-year guys and 2-year guys. Hart and Hurd have both said, they didn't play for me last year.
Right.
They didn't play to my expectations. They didn't play to the standards I've set this spring and
we
fall.
Have wide receivers that have contributed, at least a handful of them, at a high enough level that it'll get sorted out, and we're all confident in that. On the running back situation, we're all kind of wondering which one or two are really going to step to the forefront there.
But the question is,
there are guys there, but there aren't guys that you go, okay, well, he had 800 yards last year, so we know he's in the mix. I think I know who's in the mix, but you know, at the end of the day, it's going to take 3 games before you start to see exactly who that is.
It is. And guys that make plays and guys that do what's needed. And the great quote Mike Hart said, he goes, hey, look, we have a kid run for get a 45-yard gain and miss 2 blocking assignments.
Yep.
Well, I have to balance out which is more valuable for our team.
Right.
The guy that picks up 2 blocks only gets 4 yards on the gain, but he doesn't allow a sack fumble. He doesn't allow a penalty or holding, whatever it is. But with the running back position, do they need to have a go-to running back, or can they just run a fresh stable of rotation out there, or does that screw up the blocking scheme? Does that screw up the timing? Does that? What is your thought on having that stable of running backs?
Not only do you not have to have one guy, it helps to have a couple. But there's a difference, and you've heard this at the quarterback position, there's a difference between we've got 2 or 3 guys that we really, really like, and so we're going to have to play them each a little bit, and they're going to have to share carries, versus we're not entirely sure which one is really going to step up when the lights come on. Like the idea that, you know, if you've got 3 quarterbacks, you don't have any quarterbacks. You know, I don't think that's exactly what we've got here.
No.
I think we've got usable bodies. I think we've got guys that are going to be pretty good. The question is, you know, which 2 or 3 are going to step up and get most of the carries. When Jordan Howard was here, he got most of the carries. Devine Redding got most of the carries. Now, did he get spelled? Absolutely. Jordan Howard and Tevin Coleman both got spelled. I mean, they all got, you know, had guys that were doing.
Bust them 80 yards.
Yeah, even when Devine Redding was your second quarter running back, you had 2 and 3 and 4 or 3 and 4 and 5 behind him getting occasional carries because you want to throw some other bodies out there. You want those skill sets to get a little bit out there. You're going to see a lot of it. What I don't think you're going to see, and I don't think most coaches want
back.
This. Well, both. You don't want one guy getting 30 carries, but you also don't want 5 guys each getting 8. You know, a couple guys get maybe 2 or 3, and then a couple guys are going to get 10 to 15. I think that's the way ideally this would happen. Now, is it the end of the world if you got 4 guys that have 10 carries each in a game? No, not at all. Running backs, sometimes you wonder if they get in a rhythm or not, if they have time to get in a rhythm. A lot of running backs will tell you they need a couple carries to get in some rhythm.
Yeah, and a lot of running backs will be told if you fumble and you miss a block, you're not playing.
You're not getting in a rhythm.
Well, that my point is that's also going to sort itself
out.
The guys that are given chances, those who take it and make the most consistent of plays. Mike Hart has made no bones about it. He said, guys, there is no secret formula. He goes, I'm here. I'm new. I've only had him for this amount of time. The ones that are most consistent are the ones that are going to play regardless of talent.
Point blank, he said specifically, you could make a big play. That doesn't mean you're always going to get the carries if you screw everything else up.
That's
I need
right.
guys who are going to be consistent every play, and that I'm going to value that first and foremost.
The exciting part of the offensive backfield is they have a couple of guys that are between the tackle guys. Mm-hmm. They have a couple of scatterbug, Junebug kind of guys. They have Majette, who's had some carries, LeVron Williams. Had some carries.
It is a good group.
LeVron Williams, Devontae Williams.
There is not a great back in there, a great Big Ten back in there. There are a lot of good running backs in there, and so you got a lot to pick from. Is somebody going to step up to be that guy?
Who can catch the ball?
Or those couple guys? Exactly, because that tends to be how it is. Again, you don't tend to have, even Michigan way back when didn't have four guys all getting 8-10 carries.
But in 10 days from now, facing one of the best defensive lines in the history of college football, according to Greg Schiano, the defensive unbiased coordinator for Ohio State, but he's probably not too far off.
They're pretty talented.
It all starts in the front lines. If Richard Leggo is under stress, duress, and his feet are dirty, Indiana is going to have to rely on him to make the best decisions of his life. I thought the interesting part, hearing all these conversations with offensive coordinator Mike DeBoard and quarterbacks coach Nick Sheridan, was coming in and tearing down the film with him from last year and saying, what plays didn't you like to run?
Right.
What made you uncomfortable? So let's kind of minimize those. And on the turnovers, and there were plenty of them. What, about 18 interceptions, 20 interceptions?
In that neighborhood, yeah.
Let's go watch these.
5-1 game.
What did you see? Why did you see that? What's happening there? What's going on with this? And for a fifth-year senior quarterback, the part that you like about it is he should be comfortable enough in his career not to say anything to please the coach, but to get their offense better.
Right.
That's what I'm hoping to see, the new, quote-unquote, Richard Leggo. Why is he new? Well, he's a brand-new offense to run. He has a brand-new coordinator to answer to. He's a brand-new quarterbacks coach. That is new. Richard Leggo has bounced around multiple places. I don't think this will bother him as much as some people will think. He's been every year I've been somewhere else with different voices in my head.
It'd be nice if the kid catch a break and get a couple years with somebody, but that's not the case.
It would be nice if DeBoard and Sheridan and Leggo come to an understanding of what plays are minimized that make him uncomfortable, whether it's feet, turning, timing, rhythm, get those out of the playbook or minimize those, and let's not play not to turn it over, but let's make throw-it-away decisions and live to fight another down and try to stick it in their decisions.
There's two parts to that. You're exactly right. I mean, first of all, it's got to be stuff that he's comfortable with running, and it's got to be stuff that's not going to put him at risk. I mean, it does. You've got to look at what –
you can't turn the ball over.
You got to look at the skills of that kid just like you got to use them with any kid. I mean, you're not going to put in your 5'6", 140-pound running back to do a pass blocking on a regular basis. But, no, it's nice to hear that they're going to do that. I mean, my first suggestion would get a quarterback number and get rid of that 21, for instance, but that's just me. Never liked that 21 thing. Let's move over real quickly at the end of this segment here. Indiana basketball. We do have news and notes on Indiana basketball. In particular, we've got a new commitment, and that's always a good thing for Archie Miller, and it's an in-state kid, Rob Finnessy, who's from McCutcheon up in West Lafayette, or in Lafayette, rather. So he comes out of the Boilers' backyard and is going to come down here to Indiana. He is a point guard, which is a great thing. He's got great size, averaged, 22 or 23 a game last year. Kid put up really, really nice stats. He's an Indiana Junior All-Star, was on the core group as far as that's concerned. So he knows Demezi Anderson up in South Bend. So we got a kid out of Notre Dame area. We got a kid out of Purdue area. And more importantly, we took care of a big need at this point, which is a point guard on the roster. And Glass, more importantly for a lot of people, is in-state kids, starting with Indiana kids and reestablishing around the borders of the Indiana.
We just talked to Fred Glass this afternoon, who gave us a little tour of the new South End Zone facility and then answered some questions afterwards. And one of the questions, of course, was, are you happy with the way Archie Miller is hitting the recruiting trail? And he had a very nice grin. He said, yeah. And you can't blame him, because he went on to tell the story. This was part of what he thought would be the difference of perhaps Dayton and Indiana. Some people question whether Archie could do it at this level. At Dayton, you maybe don't recruit these guys. Fred told the story today that maybe at Dayton you had these guys, and then when the Big Five came in at the end.
At Indiana, you got to close against Krzyzewski and Calipari.
That's right.
And Patino.
And maybe that was the issue that was
going to. Williams.
But to paraphrase for Fred, And to paraphrase his thoughts, no, he wasn't surprised that any of this could happen because that was his vision. He thought with what Indiana has to offer and all the things we've mentioned throughout all the years, and we just went through a new tour of the South facility of all the new stuff that's coming, these things would put Indiana in a good position with football and with basketball. So this isn't hugely surprising, but he enjoys the progress and the news that they've heard. Out of basketball, and you could hardly blame him because that's his first head coach. That's his first hire.
Yeah.
And from all reports and accounts, if the first two they got were exciting, then you add another one, and two out of three are Indiana kids. That's obviously encouraging for what your vision was, what your vision for the coach was, and him buying into all of that, both athletic director and coach. It's how it should be. It sounds so remedial, but it's true. That's how Indiana basketball should work, and it's great to see that that's going in that direction.
Well, and don't forget, we got a kid coming in who's on campus now for this year's team, Race Thompson, who's
coming
out of Minneapolis, so out of Minnesota area, and then you got the kid out of Pickerington, Ohio. So you're
Hunter.
Talking about you're talking about going into the Ohio State area there.
So you have four, one redshirt, so three correct. Yes.
Yeah.
It's just how you want to count the numbers.
But interesting, me plucking it out of other schools' backyards, and you know, in these last two, you know, you're talking about South Bend, who again we talked about this. Indiana has not gotten a lot of guys out of Notre Dame's backyard.
I mean, no,
Fort Wayne,
I believe
okay,
it was the Abernathys before that.
Yeah.
That tells you how far back you go, and obviously the Lafayette area. Okay, Coy Cronk, Lafayette Central Catholic, offensive lineman for the football team.
Yep.
There's something. Again, kids have to believe coaches. Coaches have to believe in kids. And just because geography is involved doesn't mean necessarily that's going to work. So when you hear an Indiana kid over the years that didn't want to go to IU because he went to Duke, I don't know if you could really be upset that he went and played for Coach K,
right,
could
exactly.
you? But you'd like to have one or two of them over a 4 or 5 year period. I think that's the key. And they're moving in the right direction. I don't know who wouldn't be happy about that who's involved with Indiana basketball. Fans and everybody else.
Fans said they wanted Indiana recruited, and you know, he's doing that. He got a couple of kids, and still after the big fish. Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou? Got to take a quick break. 812-333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. You're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 812-333-2665 is a phone number. Some programming notes for you. We are free tonight, but starting tomorrow, Wednesday and Thursday, we will have the Reds baseball, and they are up in Chicago, Wrigley Field. 7 o'clock is first pitch.
Other way.
I lied. They're at home. That's why it's 7
they're
o'clock.
Great.
They were Chicago last week.
American ballpark. But they gave the Cubs problems. They split that four-game series.
It is the Cubbies in town, though. Again, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 7 o'clock for all three.
Reds have won 3 out of 4. Cubbies sweep the Blue Jays on the weekend. John Lackey and Homer Bailey, your pitching matchup. Marty Brenneman's pregame, 7 o'clock tomorrow night.
We'll continue our high school football Friday night at North High School with Greenfield Central coming to town. 7:30 is the kickoff there, and 7 is Chalk Talk on Friday night. And then on Saturday, we'll have the Colts at Pittsburgh for their third preseason game of the year. 6:30 is the pregame for that, and 7:30 is kickoff there. And speaking of the Colts, they went down to Dallas over the weekend and lost their second preseason game. And again, the loss isn't necessarily all that big a deal. Nobody really cares all that much. But once again, the question is, what do you see out of the game? And the answer is not great quarterback play. How many positives and negatives? Your defense just got absolutely steamrolled up and down the field by the starting Dallas Cowboy offense. The Dallas Cowboy offensive line is what you want to aspire to, folks. That is what you want.
The gold standard.
They went right through the Colts, and they're going to do that to a lot of teams, and they have been for a couple years now running the ball. You may have heard of Ezekiel Elliott having a pretty good year last year as a rookie. That is what you want out of your offensive line. That's what the Colts want to aspire to eventually. And it went right through the Colts defense. And there's your question mark, obviously, at this point. First of all, it is one of the better rushing attacks in the NFL. But is that Colts defense and all these changes, is it really going to be able to stand up to some of the better teams in the NFL? Remember, we're not just trying to beat the crappy teams. Now, obviously, you got to beat them, but you want to try to beat a couple good ones and eventually get to the playoffs and maybe beat a couple good ones there too. So you're going to get up against teams that are going to have good offenses, and they did not look good against that Cowboys offense.
Well, most teams that can't throw the football can run the football. That's usually how it works in the NFL, and the really good teams can do both. And Prescott had 23 touchdowns and 4 picks last year, and Elliott had however many yards he had and a million touchdowns, and still the Cowboys couldn't win anything. It's weird how that weird how that all works. But I think what jumps out at you from the Colts yesterday, or Saturday rather, just the things that you would hope to see moving in the right direction. It just seems like when one piece picks up, another one falls apart again. And the third round draft pick LaRaven Clark starts the second half in the second preseason game because a guy off the street is beating him out at left tackle or whatever that, or right tackle or whatever you want to call it. And it's just you get Philip Dorsett back. The Matt kid was good. He's a positive story. We'll talk about
him.
He was very positive. You look at the linebacking core, Bostic's back, and you're going to do this, and you're going to do that.
They make
one nice play to get a sack fumble touchdown, run it back in. Great, that was good. Vontae Davis falls down. Des Bryant catches a touchdown. T.J. Green's at corner. He can't keep guys across the field. And when he does, 15-yard face mask penalty. Mm-hmm. It's Groundhog Day. It's the same stuff and over and over again. You saw some bright spots from Quincy Wilson. Had a great pass defense.
Yep.
Third and goal came around the side. I don't know if that hand in the back there.
But only if they call it.
They didn't call it on that one. That was good. The Colts force a fumble deep, force a sack fumble deep.
Mm-hmm.
So their defense that did not play well, gashed and gutted for yards,
made
a play for a sack, strip, fumble, touchdown, caused a fumble. I think it was McFadden down on the 6-7 yard line. Dallas is getting ready to go in there. I got you. But what you do is you either make plays or you don't. They made a play.
Yep.
So it was unbalanced. It was that was probably the best way I could determine an unbalanced attack. Some of the young guys you see making plays, some of the old guys you're wondering when they're going to start making plays. It was nice to see Harry Anderson in the mix after knee problems.
Yep.
He was batting down balls, getting to the quarterback. David Perry you saw get some time there, so that tells you what. Woods needs a break.
It took him a while to get out there.
And the 4,000 linebackers that they have.
Yeah.
Again, you got a guy named Luke Joseph playing Y.
Yeah.
The rest of them can't.
I don't
have the answer to those questions.
Yeah.
So that's what confuses you if you're a Colts fan. The quarterback issue, as you mentioned, who cares who their third string quarterback is? Just stop it. It doesn't matter.
I guess we need something to talk about.
You want Philip Walker or Philip Dorsett or Philip Wheeler or Philip Rivers or Philip Price or Prince Philip? Who cares?
Yeah.
The point of the matter is the Colts aren't going to be very good unless two things happen. Andrew Luck plays and plays at the level of Andrew Luck years one and two before he was injured, and their defense has to resemble something.
Mm-hmm.
On their defense, besides Vontae Davis, Darius Butler, who else am I missing? Who else?
The what?
Everything else is a question. Just about everything else is somewhat of a question mark. There is no solid – of 11 players, when you can only name two as – I know what I got, and I know what they're going to give me.
Right.
That's 9 different pieces.
We knew that coming into the year
because
they turned everybody over. I mean, John Simon's going to get a shot starting linebacker.
Sure.
I'll tell you that.
Is it how Simon good is or Bostic? Bostic or Simon?
Simon.
I can't keep
I don't know who's inside, but Simon's at outside. I know he'll play. Jabal Sheard, I haven't seen the kid. I mean, they talk about how he's got rushing skills.
Never sets an edge.
I haven't seen rushing the passer at all. Barcavius Mingo was brought in kind of as a flyer.
For a million bucks or two, I can live with that.
Mingo came out of LSU as an athletic freak.
What Cleveland
he showed me on the play that he caused a turnover was was good coverage down the field. He worked his butt off in 6 or 7 seconds to eventually get to the quarterback. I mean, it wasn't that he beat a guy off the edge because he showed his unbelievable speed. What he did was he busted his butt. So, I mean, all credit to doing that. But he's probably not the only guy who's going to bust his butt a little bit, too.
But he busted his butt and made a play.
Hey, I'm fine. I'm good with that. Yeah, absolutely.
Do something.
I'm better than that than being lazy.
You can run. You can run around and do nothing.
Yeah.
You can run around the wrong direction.
Right.
You can run into the burning building.
There are a number of bodies at the defensive line and that outside linebacker and inside linebacker spot where you just don't know how it's all going to settle out.
No, and you just don't see guys making plays. Is that because Dallas is better than the Colts? Yeah, it's probably part of it. Their offensive line.
Dallas is better than the Rams, who were starting a season.
That's exactly right. And Jason Witten's better than the Rams tight end.
Yeah, exactly.
And what's the little wide receiver goes underneath?
Beasley.
You can't. It's hard to guard. I get all that, but what you haven't seen is, again, a quarter of good play, solid play, from the Colts defense. You haven't seen a quarter of the Colts offense, the first opening quarter where they've gotten more than one first down, and you keep piling these things up. I guess we have to, if we're going to be fans about this, point to the fifth-round draft pick in Mack, who had a nice day at the track.
Yeah, I mean,
he's back. He's behind schedule because he's been, guess what, injured, just like everybody else.
He got a little bit of time, kind of the last reps of the starting offensive line. By then, they had moved Jack Muhort out. I don't know if he got dinged or not, but they moved him out. They moved Vujinovic from right tackle to left guard, and they put LaRaven Clark in, and otherwise it was the starting lineup. Yeah. And Mack went in there. And so he got some nice rushes against that. It was the second string front for Dallas that he went up against. And then later on is the third string front.
Just make a play.
With his second offense. But the kid ran hard. He ran nifty in the hole. He did not shy away from running in between the in the tackles and shy away from contact. Put his shoulder into a guy on the sideline and laid him out. Showed a really nice burst. It's one game. It's against some backups. But Marlon Mack ran real hard, real nice.
I thought Turpin played well.
You like a lot what you saw, and I'll tell you what else you saw, because didn't see this last year. There's a couple plays early in that game where he stepped up and popped a guy in the teeth on a pass block.
On a blitz pickup.
Knew what he was doing, knew where to be, and stuck his nose in there and didn't back down, and that's just as important.
Yep, and I thought Turpin did what he was scheduled to do.
Yeah, he's a pro.
He's a pro. Yeah. And he showed up and he caught the ball when it was thrown to him, and he falls forward for a couple extra yards.
Yep.
And Frank Gore even got some carries in the second quarter, which I found absolutely brainless.
Not sure why, but
I don't want to have a clue why that's happening when he's at the age he is, and essentially you're not playing much of him to move on. The Colts wide receiving core is going to be limited until they can find ways to protect Tolzien to get the ball down the field. T.Y. Hilton has basically been rendered useless with Tolzien at quarterback. I don't know if they're saving something for the big season, but it seems like every Colts play is – it's third and 13, and it's a 6-yard under route to Jack Doyle, and he falls down. That's great.
Yeah.
It's a 4-yard out. It's a dump out of the backfield to Turbin. I get all that. Mm-hmm. Maybe you don't want to show anything. But Philip Dorsett, who's finally, I guess, practiced for more than one day in a row last week, is playing in the third and fourth quarter. That's a number one draft pick. That's why he gets scrutiny. He's a number one draft
pick. Rumors are that he's being shopped around by
the Colts. Where's Dante Moncrief? You ever seen Dante Moncrief?
He's banged up. He supposedly had a non-contact jersey today at practice. So, again, stick Hilton and Moncrief on the sideline if you can't throw the ball anyways. But the problem there, too, is obviously Andrew Luck's not there. Nothing's ever going to be the same without Andrew Luck there. But your offensive line is still question marks out there. You thought it was going to be a certain group of people. Then all of a sudden, as you mentioned, LaRaven Clark didn't get the start, and some other guy did.
Some guy off the street with two career NFL starts is beating
him out.
What does
that mean?
At the tackle.
Is Jeremy
Vujinovic? Good enough for me.
First-year player out of Louisiana College. I mean, is this guy the answer? Is something wrong with LaRaven Clark now all of a sudden?
Trying to plant a fire? I don't know. Jack Muhort's always hurt. The two centers that they have brought in, neither one are playing. Kelly's out for however long he's out. Mm-hmm. Some guy off the street's playing center. Some guy off the street's playing right tackle.
Yeah.
That's the Colts right now. So I'm not sure what they've solved. I'm not sure if this competitive camp has caused more injuries or has caused all these breakdowns and everything else. Chuck Pagano obviously is losing his patience. I don't blame him. This is not a team loaded with Chuck Pagano guys. These are a bunch of new guys, and now you're going to see what Chuck Pagano can do with them.
Yeah.
And if he can't, Dave, you can't blame it all on Andrew Luck.
No.
You can't do it. I'm sorry.
Look, I like Chuck Pagano.
Who doesn't?
He's a good coach. But you know what? At the end of the day, that's the guy that gets changed eventually.
Jim Irsay has never fired a head coach in the season, ever.
You've already changed your front office and went with a different guy there. If something doesn't work out, you know who's next. We will see. It's preseason right now, and I don't like to freak and start making huge decisions based on what we see in the preseason.
It'd be nice to see some scoring, some stopping, some football that would make you excited for the regular season.
Yeah, it'd be nice to be able to talk about more than one guy and have to talk about a guy named the Flea. Just me.
140 pounds in the NFL.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, folks, music means we got to head on out of here. We'll be back Wednesday night, so tune in then. You've been in the zone.